It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Good to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Time for another political breakfast. And it is a groaning board today. So much to talk about. Theron Johnson and Brian Robinson are back with us. Theron is a Democratic political consultant, and he is a former National Southern Regional Director to the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson, a Republican strategist, was former deputy chief of staff to Governor Nathan Deal. Gentlemen, welcome back. Good to have you.
Happy Friday.
Obviously, the Jim Comey firing is the big topic, not only in Washington, but here as well. But let's take a look at how muted, Brian, and I'll start with you, how muted the response was, even among Republican members of Congress here. They're being very, very careful on this one.
That's true. And they are generally very supportive of the president because most of their constituents are very supportive of the president. So in most areas, cheerleading for President Trump makes sense for them politically. In this one, I think it shows you the severity and seriousness of this issue and the confusion surrounding it, that so few Republicans have stepped up to the plate and said, yes, this actually needed to happen. This is how it should have been done. You haven't heard that.
Even Senator David Perdue, in his statement, while it supported the president's action, never said the words Jim Comey.
Right. Well, and you're seeing Republican leaders in the U.S. Senate, such as Senator Burr, who has the Intelligence Committee.
Jeff Flake.
And Jeff Flake, who's got a competitive reelection next year in a state that was pretty tight.
Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona. So you've got Republicans who are sounding cautious, who sound to me like they're willing to take this investigation to the next level to make sure that this Russia probe is completed, even though the guy who was heading it is now gone. There is an optics problem here, no doubt about it, and I think it could have implications for the 6th district race. I think the big winner on Wednesday in Georgia was John Ossoff.
Donald Trump and his administration continues to redefine rock bottom when it comes to governing this country. In 108 years of the existence of the FBI, only one director has ever been fired, and that's when Ronald Reagan's FBI director was fired by Bill Clinton. What it shows is that Donald Trump and all of the people that are around him have something to hide. At a time where Jim Comey was not only investigating, you know, millions of things right now, but he was investigating the current president of the United States and his relationships and involvement with Russia and their ability to hack and to interfere in this election that we just had in 2016. Brian says it's an optics problem. I think it's bigger than that. I think it shows that this president has no reason being in that Oval Office, because in just in less than 120 days, we have had nothing but controversy after controversy after controversy. And for the lack of response and the transparency from the White House to say why they fired him, because he was investigating not only Donald Trump, but he also had said some things that they didn't like about his investigation around the Clinton emails. And so to then, in one case, to praise him for doing his job and investigating the emails, now you want to criticize him and fire him for him allegedly misspeaking about his investigation with the emails.
But Theron, do Democrats risk getting ahead of themselves if they say we have to either block this president at every turn when he won the election, or even go farther and say we need to start moving on things like impeachment? Could they run the risk of getting ahead of the rest of the country?
The challenge we have as Democrats in what you're seeing in Washington is that every time that the Democratic Party and Democratic leaders want to start talking about jobs, wants to start talking about health care and the environment, Donald Trump goes and pulls one of his stunts like he did this week. I mean, this gentleman is a walking conflict of interest. And so what Democrats have got to be careful is not to just focus on telling the American people how bad Donald Trump is as a president. We've got to get on the offense and have something tangible that we can give every single person who are going back to their districts to talk about in their upcoming reelection campaigns.
Democrats run the serious risk of jumping the shark, which is what they're really good at. They are so livid. They are blind with rage. And they're going to overplay their hand, just like they've always done with Trump. They never thought that he could beat them. And frankly, I kind of agreed with them. I didn't think he could beat them either. And he surprised us all. And now they are this pitchfork rebellion. They are fighting at every corner, even where it hurts their end objectives. Chuck Schumer could not stand up to the left-wing fundraising base of the Democrat Party and let Justice Gorsuch go through the process. He had to stand up and fight tooth and nail to keep his base happy. And what does he get in the end? He's now unable to stop a judge that Democrats really do find objectionable, just something that they think is heinous. They have disarmed because they are so out of control.
Brian, let's take a look, though, at the corner that Republicans may have painted themselves into as well, because what you're looking at here, particularly with Georgia's Senator David Perdue, who has been a vocal supporter of the president, if there is a continual drip, drip, drip of problematic disclosures, as there was with Sally Yates's testimony and with Director Clapper's testimony, does Senator Perdue have to do some political recalculation?
I don't think that he has to do any recalculation at this juncture, because he has shown himself to be politically adept, and particularly for someone who's a self-styled outsider, he's really good at maneuvering like a seasoned veteran in this business. And let me remind you, David Perdue saw the Trump train moving well before many of the rest of us did.
He
got in early. He saw something out there that Trump was speaking to. And I give him credit, and I praise his political skill for being able to do it. So I would not have the temerity to question his political judgment. He knows what he's doing.
I think Senator Perdue is having the same problem that a lot of senators are having across the country right now. At a time where you think that the Trump administration is moving in the right direction, they confirm a Supreme Court nominee. They then have a bill passed in the House, which is the Trump Care bill, right? And it narrowly passed, but it's now going to the Senate. Right when you think that he's having some momentum and he's trying to bring the country together and actually do his job in governing, they come back and do something as crazy as firing the FBI director. What I think the position that David Perdue is in, and a lot of other Senate Republicans across the country, is that they don't know how much they should be in with this president, because right when he looks like he's moving in the right direction, he then does something as bogus and as crazy as firing your FBI director, who's investigating you at the time and investigating a lot of other things. And so I think the challenge is that I've said this to Senator Perdue and his staff. I think Senator Perdue needs to engage the people of Georgia. He needs to have a town hall. He needs to talk to them about this, not be afraid to do his job. It is public office, Dennis, so that means that you have to interact with the public.
Brian, very quickly, Georgia's other senator, Johnny Isaacson, has at least until this point been extremely quiet on this. As one of the moderate Republicans in the Senate, is he now in a very important position? Does he have actual leverage here in a way that maybe he didn't prior to this?
I think what Johnny Isaacson is a sensible, realistic, intelligent leader. Let's just say that. That's what he is. He is a gift to Georgia. And that's why he's in a important position now, why he has this influence. It's not because he's been cautious as it relates to Trump over the last year, and he has been. He's distanced himself when Trump has said things that are untrue or offensive. He's handled it with aplomb. He has influence because he's a trusted voice in Georgia, and he's a trusted voice in the world's most exclusive club, the U.S. Senate. People know who he is. They know he's not a bomb thrower. They know he's going to do the right thing. That's why he's an important player. And I hate that he's now in his 70s and this is going to be his last term, because he has served this state well, and he will be a major loss on the day that he leaves the U.S. Senate.
No one is saying that Senator Isaacson is not an important figure, but I'm pushing back when you say that he's not a moderate Republican.
I said he was called that.
Yeah, but he is that. And one of the things that we have to go back to is that he ran a very methodical campaign, because he started off being a moderate Republican, and then in this new Trump era, he shifted to being a very conservative. But to Dennis' point, that he has been silent on not this issue, but a lot of issues in these first 100-plus days of this president. David Perdue has taken some hits on the chin because he's tried to go out here and defend this president, but right when he defends him, he comes back out and does something that's crazy and is bizarre. I mean, Brian, you know this. You cannot get on the show and deny that firing your FBI director at a time where he is leading an independent investigation against you, the American people deserve transparency. They deserve to know what really went on here. I mean, you praised the FBI director, and then you didn't turn around and fire him. I mean, that's why I say that this gentleman is a walking conflict of interest.
As far as Johnny Isaacson is concerned, though, Theron, does he have leverage now that he may not even have had 100 days ago. He and a group of other Republicans in the Senate, you know, people like Susan Collins of Maine, for instance.
You know, I think that Senator Isaacson is a very shrewd and smart, and I like this new word that my good friend came up with, sensible. That's one of those dog whistle words that signals to the white conservative community here that he's one of us. I mean, we also heard that during this failed attempt for Dan Moody in the 6th congressional race. I think that the Republican Party right now, Dennis, is split. I think you have a lot of senators and a lot of House members who understand that this president received a lot of support in their districts and they're having to go back home and defend some of these bad decisions. People like Senator Isaacson, who I agree with Brian, has been a very good senator for the state of Georgia, is in a very tough pickle because at a time where he knows that some of the things that the president is doing is wrong, he can't necessarily come out and criticize him because he's a Republican and he's trying to give this president a chance. And so, again, I think that you're going to see here pretty soon that if the Trump Care bill fails in the Senate and the FBI situation continues to grow and then we still have our challenges with our foreign policy issues, I think you're going to start to see some of these Republican moderate to conservative senators come out and criticize this president.
I would say Isaacson's been a little sidelined. Theron's criticizing about the town halls. Isaacson had back surgery not so long ago. So
not criticized really, Purdue about the town
halls. He has been in recovery. So and even then, he has been doing teletown halls and communicating with constituents. I disagree with Theron, and we discussed this before. Having a town hall in this environment is ridiculous and unproductive. All it does, particularly in Georgia, you know why? Because we have an ABC News, CBS News, NBC News, Fox News Channel Bureau, and CNN headquarters are all right here. And so they're going to go out to that town hall and record liberals screaming and being insane and attacking David Perdue. Why in the world?
That didn't happen with the Tea Party, did it?
Well, they shouldn't have had town halls either. They're an out-of-date format in a world with the telecommunications that we have.
Back to the 6th District for a moment. Brian, you said that the recent developments with James Comey have left John Ossoff in a good position in the 6th District. Theron, let me turn that around, though. Does that give him what seems like a great opportunity to just kind of sail along and let Republicans perhaps find themselves in awkward positions? On the other hand, he doesn't have to get specific, and that's been one of the biggest criticisms of Ossoff, that we haven't heard much from him in terms of issues. It's basically, I'm going to be a bipartisan figure, and I'm not supporting Donald Trump.
Well, he's also talked about how he wants to go to Washington and cut wasteful spending. I mean, that's something that you
Which
hear.
Which is a dog whistle. That's a dog whistle.
John Ossoff has talked about how he wants to go to Washington and be an independent voice to cut wasteful spending. He's also talked about how he wants to go there and to try to improve Obamacare. He's admitted that it wasn't a perfect law, but we need to improve it, not just repeal it and replace it with what. But here's a challenge for John Ossoff. With a month and a half roughly left to go in this race, in a time where it's during the summer and Republicans are hoping that voters are not paying as close attention, that they're going to stay out of this race, that they may forget to vote or may absentee vote because they're traveling all across the world because of summer holidays, he's got to keep this race interesting. And I think what he can do is he can strike a healthy balance, which is talk about the inability of this president to govern and in the Oval Office as president. But at the same time, to your point, Dennis, he's got to talk about what he's for. And I think that his jobs message was good. He's running a really good ad right now with a gentleman talking about small business and cyber jobs and technology jobs. I would encourage him to go a step further. Talk about how we as Georgians can really embrace his message and create more jobs specifically for small business owners and for minorities and as well. So he can do both. He can criticize Comey and have other surrogates do that as well to remind people that if Karen Handel goes to Washington, she will be a rubber stamp for this disarray that we're seeing. But at the same time, he can talk about how if he goes to Washington, he'll try to bring good paying jobs to the district.
But he will be a backbencher, the most junior member of a minority party in the House. So someone could quite fairly say, what can you possibly do?
Well, that'll be good training for him now that he's engaged, will soon be married,
but
being
no,
irrelevant.
Brian, what is it with you and John Ossoff and his personal business? I want to connect you with John, and I want him to ask you this question. Why do you care so much about his personal life, who he chooses to date, who he chooses to get engaged to, and one day marry? And you criticize this gentleman for being supportive of his fiance, who's pursuing her medical career.
Outside of this,
guess what? I mean, this issue has been polled. People are talking about it. At a time when we have a dysfunctional government in Washington, people understand that John Ossoff is not breaking any rules or any laws by living outside the district. I just hope that y'all got to come up with a better message than talking about who he chooses to love and spend the rest of his life with and where he decides to do it at.
Back to the question.
I just want to be invited to the wedding. It's all, I bet you this was going to be a rocking reception, and I want to be there.
Theron, back to the question, what influence can he possibly have? And it could be argued, okay, yeah, you're promising all these things, but once you get there, you're going to be the most junior member of the minority party in the House.
That's something that he's going to have to talk about. But guess what? It's easier to have that conversation once he's elected as a member of Congress. What he's also got to do is say, listen, the health care vote around Trump care barely passed the House. All right, it was a slim margin. If we can elect me and more Democrats across the country, we can be in a position to push back against some of these crazy Republicans' initiatives.
Brian, does Karen Handel have a different problem? And that is, she's been very quiet during the days following the Comey firing. But will she have to come out at some point and say definitively how she stands on some of the things that the president has done? And can she do that without angering somebody, either the base or perhaps moderate voters that she'll need to attract?
I am co-hosting a meet and greet in my on my street in my neighborhood for Karen Handel on Saturday. And we're going to have a lot of folks there, and there's a lot of Republican interest in this seat and in this race. And I'm getting engaged as a voter to help her. What I want to see from her, given that all polling on this is within the margin of error, there's nobody who can sit back and just ride out a lead in the polls.
No, you've can't play four corners.
And so she's going to have to, you know, pick her poison to some degree. And you do that by having a message that's strong. This is where I give John Ossoff some credit. I know what he stands for. I know what his brand is. His brand is, I'm not going to be like all these other Democrats. He didn't say that, but that's the dog whistle that he's blowing is, hey, I'm going to vote against waste. I'm not going to be a big spender. I am going to bring in tech jobs. And he's speaking directly in his commercials to a college-educated electorate. It is very different than what you would do in a statewide race or in a city of Atlanta mayor's race. This is a very special electorate. And he is speaking to them as if they're intelligent, as if they know what they're informed voters. I admire that. So with Karen, I think that she needs to make this a choice. And Ossoff wants to tell you, you don't have to make a choice. You can be against Trump and think he's crazy. I'm smart. I'm not going to be a liberal nut. I'm a safe vote for you. Karen's got to make voters know he's not a safe vote. We have a tax cut that's going to be very important to the high-income earners in this district coming up later this year. John Ossoff is a no vote. Karen Handel is a yes vote. Do you want to see your upper marginal tax rates brought down? If so, vote for Karen Handel. If you want to see Obamacare's unsustainable spending continued, vote for John Ossoff. He may have been the vote that killed that if he had been in Congress when that vote came to the floor.
When it barely made it through, yeah.
Brian, I just have one question with this meeting read that you're co-hosting. Will you allow Karen Handel to actually park in one of those three-car garages that you guys have on your street? I mean, I'm assuming you'll open it up for her. But no, listen, on a serious note, John Ossoff has got to make a pivot here pretty soon. And I've said this to him, and I'll say it on this show. I think that there's just not enough white voters in this district for him to attract over the amount of white voters, many of them educated, to vote for him over Karen Handel. He's got to continue to go after that demographic, but he's got to stir up some excitement with the base voters. And these are not just African Americans. These are Asian Americans. These are Hispanic Americans. And many of them are young people who live in the Brookhaven part of the district, also in the Fulton County and East Cobb portion of the district. He's got to generate some excitement amongst them as well.
Very quickly, let's move to some of the things that happened at the state capitol. Brian, I'll start with you because it was your former boss, Governor Deal, who signed the campus carry bill. A lot of folks said, hey, yes, there were more exceptions, which was part of his concern, but he also expressed a broader concern in his veto message a year ago where he said, look, we already have this right enshrined in the federal Constitution. Some of the critics of the fact that he signed it now are saying, well, he said that. What happened?
Well, what happened was he engaged this year. He laid out very specific criteria that would get him to sign it. They followed that criteria. He was in a box. He had to sign it. The only other option would have been to explicitly state last year, I won't sign anything on this. It's a no-go issue. That's not what he did. And let me tell you, Nathan Deal is a pro-Second Amendment Republican, and he's unapologetic about it. His center of gravity is going to be on greater gun rights. And we saw that play out this year. Now, at the end of the day, I don't think that this is going to change much of anything. This is a symbolic issue. This is people who want greater gun rights want to keep marching forward and showing progress on that. People who are against it are going to warn of all of this carnage and death. It's not going to happen. People who want to go in and shoot up a school aren't going to go get a permit first to go into the school and shoot people. So it's irrelevant as far as school shootings go. All it's going to do is maybe tell people in the surrounding areas who are criminals, hey, these people may be armed now. I might need to go somewhere else.
I want us to remember these comments by my good friend Brian Robinson to
say
that it's symbolic and that it's irrelevant to school shootings. Because
absolutely.
What's going to happen here, and I don't wish this on anyone or any person or any family, but we've seen a growing number of shootings on college campuses all across the U.S. God forbid we have one here in Georgia. I am disappointed in the governor in signing this bill. Yes, he was more engaged. Yes, Republicans decided to be a little bit more open to criticism about it. But I still believe, and I want to go on the record for saying this, that giving students access and the ability to carry a gun legally or illegally on a campus does not help them learn, and it does not make parents feel that their children are safe when they're at these college campuses.
Another bill, this one the governor vetoed. Brian, again, I'll start with you. He vetoed a bill involving foster care and adoptions, and it was pretty much on technical grounds this time because of the way that it addressed the process and how long folks could go without court approval. But what the governor and many other legislators on both sides of the aisle were trying to do this session was pass an overall comprehensive foster care and adoption bill, and it looks like that's going to have to wait for another year now.
It is, but I think you're seeing a lot of political weight shifting behind that issue. I think that's something they're going to tackle very early in the session next year, get it out of the way.
Can they do it without the religious freedom debate kicking in again, though?
Absolutely. I think those who insisted on having that language in here, that actually backfired on them. And in fact, some of the senators who voted for that amendment in committee then fought on the floor to pass it without that amendment.
And this was an amendment which would have allowed some agencies to deny LGBT couples if they felt in conscience they had to do that.
Exactly. Those senators believe in the broader point, the underlying point of the bill, which is to update our laws governing foster care and adoption. And it's something that it goes beyond politics. I think someone said this week, we need to have a non-political answer next year. And I think there's consensus on that amongst Republicans and Democrats to get this done, because this is about our most vulnerable children.
Georgians were on the path to basically pass a more comprehensive adoption bill until this one senator over in the Senate decided to inject the religious liberty argument into this. And it was on the pathway of passing because it was a collaborative bill with a lot of bipartisan support. But when you introduce an amendment with language that is so blatantly discriminatory, that's what happened. And then what you saw, to Brian's point, is that a lot of these Republicans who voted for the amendment started to retract away from this. But the real loser here in this whole veto by the governor, and it was the right thing to do by the governor, are the hundreds of thousands of children out there right now who can benefit from a more comprehensive adoption program, who are trying to find homes and families so they can have a good life. To me, those were the ultimate losers by the Senate Republicans' inability to pass a full comprehensive bill that did not discriminate against LGBTQ couples.
So Brian thinks it will happen next year, do you?
I agree, and I think that the Republicans learned their lesson, that at a time where Governor Deal has said that we are a state that does not want to discriminate on people, we are a state that want to do business with a lot of different organizations and corporations, it will not be as controversial, I hope, and I think it will be a very early item that we'll be discussing in next year's session.
Just a minute or two left here, and I apologize we have to be so brief on this, but DeKalb County was shaken once again, this time by the arrest in Piedmont Park of the county sheriff on public indecency and obstruction charges. He says it's a misunderstanding. Theron Sheriff Jeffrey Mann has been praised by some members of the county commission as having done a good job in the sheriff's office, which has been really troubled in the past, as we all know if we've lived here a long time. But will this derail some of the efforts by the county commission and CEO Michael Thurman to try to fix some of the other messes in DeKalb?
No, and this CEO and CEO Thurman, he's not going to let that happen. What happened with Sheriff Mann was very embarrassing and disappointing. However, voters in DeKalb County got to remember this has been an exemplar in a sheriff and Sheriff Mann. He has a good record. He made a mistake. It's bad, and DeKalb County's got to move forward.
And the governor has just appointed a commission to take a look at this and whether he should be removed from office.
Correct. So at a time where we have all this going on, CEO Thurman and the commissioners have got to talk about the successes of DeKalb. We've got to talk about how he's getting a handle on the water billing issue, how the governor just signed an E-SPLOS, which has never happened in the DeKalb County history, where they're going to now have an opportunity to really have a robust conversation about different projects. He's got to also talk about how he's invested a lot of time and resources into cleaning sewers and restoring pride in the southern part of the county, cleaning it up. And so, no, CEO Thurman is not going to tolerate it. It's not going to derail the progress of this county. But Sheriff Mann has got to figure out how he moves forward and gets past this, and I think he will. But ultimately, the county's on the right direction, and I don't think this will derail any of their efforts.
This is more than embarrassing. This is recklessness. This is almost living on the edge on purpose. Some people just get too big, and they just have to live on the edge. They got to take these risks. And this one blew up in a humiliating fashion. You know, look, if you want to engage in this sort of sordid, illicit behavior, you know, get a hotel room. I mean, there's plenty of options out there to do these things. To do it in public is disgusting, and it's more than disappointing. I think he should just resign, and that way he can go back to his own private life and go to whatever parks he wants to go to, and it's not going to be news.
Brian, what, though, will this do to the efforts to solve some of DeKalb's other problems, or will it affect it at all?
It is another bruise on a once-proud county. And I agree with Theron that CEO Thurman is fantastic. He is a gift to the county. I'm so glad that we've got someone like him, someone of his caliber, there to clean the county up. But, you know, we've had one indicted or imprisoned sheriff after another in DeKalb County. The only one, I think, in the last 40 years who hasn't been was Thomas Brown, who stepped down to run against Hank Johnson for Congress and lost. And we've even had one former sheriff have the next sheriff murdered. I mean, it's so exposing yourself, I guess, in the great scheme of things seems like a pretty minor event given the history of DeKalb County. But that's the biggest issue here, is it's just one more drip, drip, drip against DeKalb County.
I got to say this. You know, when we had a Republican member of the House get arrested for DUI with his children in the car, I did not hear one Republican, I didn't hear Brian, anyone telling them that that gentleman should resign. Let's state the facts here. What Sheriff Mann allegedly did, if he did it, is wrong. But it's a no-lo. It's a misdemeanor. And it does not warrant a person to resign because of the act. Now, I do think that the sheriff's office is one of the offices where people expect the sheriff, he or she, to be a very masculine, dominant, authoritative figure because you're there to protect the citizens of the county in which you serve. So I don't think we need to get so ahead of ourselves with saying that a person who's done a really good job in making sure that he continues the success of Sheriff Brown, to have a stable sheriff department, that he should resign. However, he should deal with this. And I don't think that it's going to paint a negative issue around the county, because I think that the county's got new leadership, they got a new commission, and they're working together and they're moving the county forward.
I will say I finally got an accurate water bill, and for that, I sing Hosanna to Michael Thurman. I mean, DeKalb has determined that I went from using 60,000 gallons of water in a month to less than 10. So you tell me if I was crazy when I was complaining about it last year.
And you don't look any less clean at all.
A shower in Fulton. Yeah. That was my secret.
Brian Robinson is former Deputy Chief of Staff and Communications Director to Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director of the Obama 2012 campaign. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll see you again soon.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis.